Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me, box13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives, and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/radiodetectives. Well, before we do get started, I want to let you know today's program is brought to you by the support of our listeners. You can support the show at support.greatdetectives.net. And speaking of support, our listener support campaign is coming up middle of next month, heading into Labor Day weekend. And I do want to encourage you to email me one of your favorite episodes. If you've got a program we played, you'd like to hear it again, you think if somebody's new to the show, they should definitely hear this, then just drop me a line, box13 at greatdetectives.net, and the subject, play it again, Adam, and so I'll know where to sort it. All right, well, now we're going to wrap up the current Johnny Dollar matter. I want to remind you, coming up later in the program, we continue with the High Sky Hoodoo story. But now let's go ahead and listen to part five of the Ricardo Amerigo matter.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
John, this is...
Don't tell me, Harry Branson at Philadelphia Mutual.
Yes, it is. Listen, John, I know you found his Amati violin.
Are you sure?
But Ricardo Amerigo himself, nothing. And after all, there's not only the $20,000 policy on him, but... What do you mean, am I sure?
Are you sure it was Amerigo's Amati violin I found?
Why, of course... What do you mean?
What if it wasn't? What if it was just an imitation?
John, stop it. That's What do you mean?
That $30,000 well-insured fiddle I picked up in the South Jersey swamps may be a phony.
Oh, no. For heaven's sakes, come over here to the office and tell me...
Oh, take it easy, Harold boy, until I've had time to find out a few things.
John?
See ya.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator...
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar, location Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, to the Philadelphia Mutual Liability and Casualty Company. Following is a final accounting of expenditures incurred during my investigation of the Ricardo Amerigo matter. When Ricardo Amerigo's car was hauled out of a swamp somewhere near Port Morris, New Jersey, there was no sign of his body. Only a sawed-through steering arm on the car that indicated somebody had done him dirt. However, I did find the fiddle. The $30,000 Amati that had helped him become one of the world's top concert violinists. Anyhow, with a fiddle under my arm, I ended up at the shop of violin maker Eric Snowden for final confirmation that it was the genuine Amati that I'd found. This Eric confirmed. However, while we were in the second floor workroom of his shop on Eisminger Street talking about the fiddle, somebody pounded on the street door downstairs.
Oh, bother. I'll be back in a moment, Mr. Dollar.
And that's when I accidentally, and so help me, it was accidental, I knocked open the door of a cabinet and discovered another violin, identical in every respect with the one I'd found in the swamp at the scene of Amerigo's accidental death. Okay, so I did exactly what you would have done. I put the one in the cabinet into Amerigo's case and the one from the case into the cabinet. One of them was the genuine Amati. But which one?
I'm sorry, Mr. Dollar, but he was so insistent. I thought he was one of my, shall we say, better clients. As it turned out, it was just a youngster who wanted to see one of the new G-strings.
A youngster?
Oh, I see you're joking. But now, let me take this magnificent instrument, readjust the sound post and bridge so that it...
No, wait, Mr. Snowden. It's later than I thought. There are some things I must do immediately. Suppose I come back here later.
Very well. Meantime, I shall make the adjustments on the Amati to restore its
tone. No, I've got to take it with me.
But I don't understand.
There are a few things in this case I don't understand right this minute, but I hope to before very long.
Mr. Dollar, you talk in riddles. Why don't you leave the violin?
No, thanks. I'll see you later.
But please be careful with it. If anything should happen to that priceless...
Don't worry. Nothing will happen to it. I found that I'd almost spoken too soon, for I pounded down the stairs, across the floor of the store, and out of the door without the caution the book says one should exercise when leaving a suspect in a case. I'd no sooner got out on the street... It was a flower pot, big enough to have killed a horse in its fall from the upper story window ledge.
Oh, no! Good heavens, wait, Mr. Dollar, that was an accident.
But I didn't wait. Expense account item 14, 10 cents. Phone call to Harry Branson at the insurance company to have the police put a man on Eric Snowden's shop immediately to make sure he wouldn't try to skip. Item 15, $7.50 for a cab to the house of fiddle-playing Jerry Goldsmith out in Lanark.
Mr. Dollar.
Hello, Goldsmith.
I didn't expect to. But you left in rather a hurry earlier.
Sorry, I had to keep a date. Hey, look, Jerry, when I was here before...
You still have the violin?
Yes. Yes, when I was here earlier and you played it, you didn't seem to think it was really Ricardo Amerigo's Amati.
No, I didn't say that. At least
Well, at least it didn't sound like it when you played it.
Yes, Mr. Dollar, that's right.
Ah, now, think a minute. You were a bit upset, excited, whatever you want to call it, when I brought it to you.
Yes, that's true. Nevertheless...
And I think you were also afraid I might have suspected you of Amerigo's murder when you admitted his violin was the one thing you wanted more than anything else in life.
Except, of course, to have Ricardo straighten out. Become himself again. Become the artist again. Deserve to have this... Oh, I don't know. Whatever I say seems to make it sound like a... I don't know.
All right, now, look, Jerry, calm down, will you? I'm not trying to pin a murder rap on you. Calm down and do something for me, will you?
Why, yes, of course. What?
Here.
Have you had something done to it to restore the tone it used to have?
It hasn't been touched by anyone else since I laid my hands on it. But I want you to play it again.
Yes, of course I will. But didn't you say that some old fool with a music store cleaned it up?
Jerry, it hasn't been touched by anyone else since I laid my hands on it. Now play it.
All right.
Go ahead, Jerry. It's the Amati, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, it's the Amati. A beautiful, wonderful...
Funny. I never realized what a violin could... Can you hear me, Jerry?
Yes. Yes.
And to think it's taken something like this to lead me to a killer. Expense account item 16, 420. Cab to Philadelphia Mutual, the office of Harry Branson.
But if you're right, John, you mustn't go out there alone. Don't you understand if he's the man who planned the murder of Ricardo Amerigo? He wouldn't stop... Yes, yes, I had the police put a man out there to cover his shop. But, John, I still think...
Expense account item 17, $1.60. The buck was a tip for going through a couple of red lights. Back to the shop of the violin maker, Eric Snowden.
Mr. Dollar.
Hi, Mr. Snowden. I'm afraid I left you rather abruptly a while ago.
You mentioned, Mr. Dollar, it's you. That near accident when you left that flower pot, I don't know how it... possibly could have shifted on the window ledge up there.
On the third floor window ledge of this little combination store, workshop, and home of yours. That much I did notice while I was ducking it. If it had come off a second floor window, you know I might have suspected you of giving it a helpful shove.
Oh, good heavens, Mr. Dollar, you can't possibly mean that.
All right, forget it for the moment.
But how can
Let's go up to your workshop on the second floor. Come on.
Well, yes, of course. But may I ask why?
I want to show you something. And I think you know what.
No, I certainly don't. Unless something has happened to the Amati.
Oh, something certainly has.
You damaged it since you were here.
No such luck.
Mr. Dollar, please, what are you talking about?
Okay, here. Now tell me, the truth. Is this Ricardo Amerigo's Amati violin?
Yes, yes. I've told you so.
You're sure?
Of course I'm sure.
You know something? You aren't, but I am.
What?
Now open that cabinet there beside your work table.
What for?
Because I tell you to.
But I... Just what are you getting at, Dollar?
Are you going to open it or shall I?
No. Get out of here. This is my shop, my place. You can't do this sort of thing to me.
Would you rather the police did? They're on their way.
The police? But I...
Well?
There's no need to open it. Ricardo Amerigo Zamati is in it.
Well, that's where you're wrong. This is the Amati. In this case, the one in the cabinet is the identical copy of the Amati that you made.
Yes, Mr. Dollar.
Why, Snowden?
Because the loss of this priceless instrument would have been unthinkable.
$30,000 insurance on it.
Oh, money doesn't buy a violin like this. It must be played by an artist, by many artists, like the artist Ricardo was. So when Ricardo disappeared...
Or was murdered?
When Ricardo disappeared, I had to make sure that the Amati would still... I didn't murder him.
Isn't this the hacksaw that cut the steering rod on his car? Well, Snowden, isn't it?
Yes. No, I mean...
And because of it and your crazy plan to keep the real Amati, you and you alone are going to take the rap for Amerigo's murder.
No, please. Ricky.
Ricky? So you, sir. That's right, Mr. Dollar. I'm Ricardo Amerigo.
You're what?
The dirty, drunken has-been that started all this. Sawed through the steering rod on my car, wrecked it in the swamp, left some of my clothing there. That phony fiddle was my idea. Not to collect the insurance on it, not that alone. But to make sure it could come back again. Be played again by somebody that deserved to play it. The way perhaps one time I deserved to play it.
But Ricardo...
A man disappears, murder, or whatever. There's a fuss about it for a while, and it's over. But this, no, this must live. This violin, you will now. The world will be the better for it.
But you, and this apparent murder...
The insurance was my last hope of paying back Pete Corbin, my agent, and the others who tried so hard to straighten me out. Pay back some of the money and the heartbreak they spent on me. Or let your insurance company pay them back. Because I never could. I couldn't even leave my hiding place here in Eric's house. Because I knew that sooner or later he'd pity me enough to give me more of the drink that's been all I've been living for. Eric, God bless him, Eric knew, of course. But only he. Be kind to him. If you can.
Ricky.
That's all, Mr. Dollar. Oh, unless... Will you buy me a drink before you call in the police?
Expense account item 17, $8.50. One bottle of the best I could buy before I call in the police. Item 18, hotel in Philadelphia, miscellaneous fare back to Hartford. Total expense account, $182.65. Remarks? No insurance payment necessary on either the Amati or the man. And I guess he really was a man. More than he knew. What the courts will do about him and about Eric Snowden, well, the courts will do. And I'm glad I have to have no part in it. You know, it's funny. Somehow I think I have a little better appreciation for music now than... Oh, well. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Remember, there'll be another intriguing story for you beginning next Monday night.
Next week, the Duke Red Matter. A racehorse that can only be stopped by a killer. And the killer didn't stop with horses. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. It is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone, who also wrote this week's story. Heard in the cast were Harry Bartell, Lawrence Dobkin, Victor Perrin, Barney Phillips, Forrest Lewis, Eric Snowden, Herb Vigran, and James McCallion. Musical supervisor and violinist, Amerigo Marino. Be sure to join us on Monday night, same time and station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. This is Roy Rowan speaking.
Welcome back. Well, this was a somewhat unusual story for a lot of reasons. First of all, Johnstone actually wrote the story, and he wrote it under his own name. That's unusual because Jack Johnstone wrote a lot of radio scripts, but most of them were under pseudonyms for whatever reason. This one, he goes ahead and owns it as one of his own. And I thought it was a pretty good script. This is my second time listening to all of these 15-minute serials. But I have to admit, I was kind of very surprised. I was not planning on Ricardo Amerigo being alive the first time I listened to it. So it definitely took me for a surprise, and I'm sure it did you. The other thing that's worth noting here, you know, as I listened to the show, you know, I listened to the closing credits, I didn't hear any female names, and I thought back over the serial, and I didn't remember hearing any female characters in this entire program. And that's kind of unusual when we're dealing with not just, you know, a half-hour program, which might happen. I don't recall that happening too often. But in this case, we're dealing with 60-70 minutes worth of programming and no female characters. Very unusual in that regard. And also the borrowing of names. You know, mentioned previously Eric Snowden, but Amerigo, of course, was the first name of the guy who did the music on the program, and it became the last name of the violinist in the story. So, I don't know if, you should technically, be reusing names like that. I guess that, that worked overall. Overall, a pretty good story. Well, now we turn to High Sky Hoodoo. And I did want to share a little news. I found a log on the, Australian OTR website. It actually has an earlier date, for, the Carter Brown stories than I, initially have. And, actually they had High Sky Hoodoo, that series, airing the week of December 21st of 1957. So a little earlier than I had thought. Let's go ahead and we'll take a listen. It's time for High Sky Hoodoo, part two.
Carter Brown Mysteries. Adventures in excitement and suspense. Based on the best-selling novels by the slick storytelling sensation, Carter Brown.
Carter Brown. The morning dawned bright with determination for me. The old man and Sue Pearson may have taken what I said for bravado, but I was determined to prove that the jinx tag they'd fixed on Whitney Kent was a lie. I decided to say nothing about the visit of Slade, the Blue Circle Detective Agency man. That was something I'd take up later with Milton Moore. First, I wanted words with Jim Berg, our security man.
Well, morning, Whitney. The super salesman with a no-good product. Well, you got my sympathy, pal.
Thanks for nothing. What gives, Jim? Anything new?
Nah, not a thing. The top brass are in conference this morning. They're going to use Hangar C to start on the next F-92K. I got to have four guards around that building night and day from here on.
Who gets in?
Only the staff connected with the work.
And the executives?
Oh, I'm sorry, Whit. You're not included. It was your father's instructions.
Oh, that's okay, Jim. He told me to take 3 weeks vacation. Looks like he means it. You have any leads?
No. I figured Gene Latimer made a mistake somewhere, like the Air Force character says, but heck, I'm no engineer, just an ex-FBI man trying to make a living. So I have to presume the plane was sabotaged. Right now, I'm starting a double check on all the employees who could have got near that plane.
How many of them are there?
Oh, over 100. Looks like quite a job, doesn't it?
Mr. Berg, I wish you luck. You will need every ounce of it.
Well, you're around bright and early, Whitney.
Just paying my round of calls. Chuck in.
He's got Mr. Moore with him.
Then maybe I won't bother.
I've got something to say to you.
Anything from those luscious lips I will listen to with pleasure.
Not this you won't. It's about last night, the way you talked to your father. Why can't you even try to appreciate his point of view?
His point of view goes no further than Kent Aircraft. Everything else runs a bad second.
You're a fool, Whitney.
And you're a beautiful girl. But if you don't stop worrying about your boss and start enjoying life, you'll look in your mirror one fine morning and realize it's too late. You'll finish up senior stenographer till they pension you off.
Oh, Sue, Mr. Kent free at the moment?
I'm sorry, Mr. Latimer. He's in conference.
Well, I'll see him later.
Just a minute, Gene.
I'm busy, Whitney.
Not too busy for what I've got to say. I've thought of a perfect solution to your problem.
Oh?
Yeah. When you've got this next F-92K ready to test, let me fly it.
That's what you've been after all the time.
Let's not argue about that. Look at it another way. If the plane's okay, everything's fine. The Air Force resumes their deliveries. The orders I've taken can be filled. On the other hand, if the plane doesn't work, if it goes in the same way that one did yesterday morning, who gets crisped up?
You do.
Right. So if it does borrow its way into the dirt and takes Whitney Kent with it, at least you know that one line of investigation is closed. Well, what about it?
It's worth thinking about. I'll devote quite a lot of thought to your proposition. Good morning.
Why do you have this hero complex? Why don't you let the experts work it out? People like Latimer and Jim Berg and the others. It's their job.
Except for one thing. They can't fly. They can never appreciate how Hank Jordan felt when the plane got away from him. It's beyond their experience.
But not beyond yours. Because you're not only a flyer, but a hero as well.
Yeah, if you want it that way, that's just how I do feel. You've spent your life shining the seat of your skirt on a stenographer's chair. You don't know any more about it than the rest of them. Who the heck are you to sneer at the guys who fly the planes?
I wasn't sneering at the real heroes, Whitney. Only the phony ones.
Thanks for those kind words. One of these days you'll eat them. And they'll give you indigestion. I swept out of our office and headed down the corridor to the office of Milton Moore. I figured he'd be finished with his conference with Chuck pretty soon, and I wanted to talk with the new director. It was easy to ignore Moore's red-headed secretary's protests, though not her profile, and I settled down in his private office to wait.
Is this the customary procedure around here, Mr. Kent? Bursting into people's offices without permission?
Oh, I'll give you permission, Mr. Moore. You can come right in.
Your kind of behavior is something I am not accustomed to.
There's something I'm not accustomed to either. That's having a private detective go through my bags in my hotel room.
Oh?
A Blue Circle agent, name of Slade. That's the outfit you engaged, isn't it? What's the idea having them investigate me?
Even a young pup like you ought to have sense enough to see that Latimer's accusations against you, wild as they may have been, should be checked. Now, will you get out of my office?
In a minute. How are things with the Ace Aero Corporation these days?
I wouldn't know.
How were they when you left?
All right.
What were they building?
Jets, naturally.
Bombers or fighters?
Fighters.
As good as the F-92K?
No. Just what is it you're trying to insinuate, young man?
I was just wondering. You pulled Ace Aero out of trouble. You put them back on their feet, then left them. I wondered why. I wondered if you still had any association with Ace Aero. Financial association, I mean. It just occurred to me that if you had, you were backing a losing proposition when Kent Aircraft produced the F-92K.
Is that all?
No. It also occurred to me that, on the other hand, if Kent Aircraft had a lot of trouble with their planes, then maybe Ace Aero could buy them out cheaply when the psychological moment came. And if Ace Aero could then build the F-92K without bugs, they could sell them, couldn't they?
Are you seriously suggesting that I would descend to murder just to protect my capital?
I'm not suggesting anything. I'm only thinking out loud.
I must say you go in for original thinking, Kent. I'd better tell you some of the facts of an executive's life. I didn't have any capital interest in Ace Aero for one simple reason. I didn't have any capital. 25% holding I have in your father's organization was bought with money loaned to me by Owen Hollmeyer. He wanted to invest some money in this firm. He knew what I'd done for Ace Aero, so he was prepared to lend me capital to invest. He thought of it as a safeguard for his own investment.
Oh.
So you see, Kent, that if anyone has good reason for wanting Kent Aircraft to sell their F-92Ks again, it's me.
I guess so.
Now, do you mind leaving my office? I have work to do.
Of all the crazy fool things to do...
Not to me, Chuck. Mr. Moore was having me investigated, so I thought I might give him a little of the same treatment.
I'm not talking about that. Moore had it coming, you gave it to him. Made me feel sort of proud of you.
For the first time.
No, Whitney. There were many times when you were in Korea when I was proud of you. And I was proud of you in Europe, too. Proving that you could sell aircraft with the best of them.
What is this, old home week?
But I'm mad at you. How in the name of creation could you do a stupid thing like that?
I thought you said Moore had it coming.
I'm not talking about Moore. I'm talking about that crazy fool offer you made to Gene Latimer.
Oh, that?
Yeah, that. Latimer wants to take you up on the offer. Hollmeyer and Moore think it's a great idea. What the heck could I say?
But you figure it's a great idea, too.
That's what I did say. So you're all set to fly the next F-92K.
When?
Saturday. They're working 24 hours a day on it.
Oh, that's fine.
Sue says you've got a hero complex. I think it's a plain darn fool complex.
Maybe. But Gene Latimer was right about one thing. I threw the first one away by flying it when I wasn't exactly sober. That gives me a sort of responsibility, Chuck.
Boy Scout stuff.
It's more than that. That first plane had bugs. If I'd been sober, I could have told you what particular bug it was. But I can't remember anything.
Well?
Well, I've got a feeling. If that plane still has bugs and I fly it, I think the memory might come back and I might be able to do something about it before it's too late.
Maybe you aren't such a darn fool after all. You really want to fly the F-92K?
Of course.
Okay, that's what I wanted to know. That it wasn't just bravado. What you say makes sort of sense, I think.
Thanks.
You comfortable at the beach house?
Sure.
Anytime you feel like eating real food, come up to the house for dinner.
Thanks.
Now get out of here. I'm busy.
Okay. I'll leave you to it, Chuck.
Well, congratulations, Whitney.
On what?
That interview with your father.
Oh. The perfect secretary. Keeps the intercom open so she can hear everything that goes on, huh?
Well, I don't make a habit of it, but I did that time. Come here, Whitney.
What for?
I'd like to kiss you.
Well, to what do I owe that tremendous experience?
You could call it an apology. I was quite wrong about you, Whitney Kent. I'm sort of glad I was wrong, too.
I'd spent a lot of my time waiting, especially in Korea. But no waiting time was as bad as the days while the F-92K was got ready. Came Friday and I went down to the plant. The old man was with me.
We're fixing the takeoff at 7 a.m. tomorrow, Whit. I've got it cleared with the Air Force, okay, 30 minutes. They've defined the area and so forth, so you can collect all the dope this afternoon, met reports, etc.
Sure. I thought I'd collect some flying gear today.
I've had it taken into the hangar here. Berg's doubling the guard tonight and is watching things himself as well.
Good. Oh, there's Latimer, stroking the fuselage like it was a tame cat. Hello there, Gene.
Hi, Whitney. Well, there's nothing wrong with it. I've checked every inch of it.
Then I shouldn't have any trouble tomorrow.
Whitney, it occurs to me that I said a lot of stupid things a while back. I'm sorry.
That's okay, Gene. I can appreciate how you felt. And that's my gear there, huh?
Yep.
I think I'd like to take the parachute out and have a look at it.
But it's all packed.
Then I'd like it unpacked. After all, I'm flying this butterbox tomorrow.
Okay, Whitney, whatever you say.
I had a queer crawling feeling along my spine. When the chute was unfolded and billowed out in the hangar's expanse, I realized why. There was a 6-foot slit across the center. That chute wouldn't have brought a mouse down safely, let alone a guy of my weight.
Latimer, what's the meaning of this?
Don't ask me, Mr. Kent. As far as I knew, that chute was checked and packed properly.
Lucky for me, I took a look. I think I'll borrow one from the Air Force and bring it along in the morning and put it in myself.
Wait, if they could do that to the chute...
Yes, Chuck. What could they do to the plane?
Welcome back. Well, I have to admit, this is really my favorite of the Carter Brown stories so far. Really some good dramatic tension and some real sense of suspense. And this character here is really multi-dimensional, multifaceted. So I'm really enjoying this. I hope you are as well. And we will be back for the next part of High Sky Hoodoo next week. I do want to... also let you know that on Monday we have a brand new Johnny Dollar cereal to go ahead and bring you. And we'll be back tomorrow with the lineup. In the meantime, send your comments to Box 13 at GreatDetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives. And become one of our friends on Facebook, Facebook.com/Radio Detectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.